What is the likelihood that the Syrian government used chemical weapons against its own population on August 21st? How does the U.S. government account for its support of the rebels now acknowledged as al-Qaeda-affiliated groups? Are there motivations other than humanitarian considerations pushing the White House towards a military confrontation with Syria? Why is the U.S. president bothering with a congressional vote when he has authorized military aggressions by executive fiat in the past? And how good a job is the mainstream media doing in relating the essential elements of what could be the next Middle East war? We'll have exclusive interviews with Michelle Chosadovsky, Paul Craig Roberts, and Julie Levesque, updating us on the current situation unfolding in Syria. On today's program, Syria Gambit, The Race to War. Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of September 5th, 2013, as we debut our new season. I'm series host and producer Michael Welch. The Global Research News Hour is a special radio collaboration between the Center for Research on Globalization and campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. We seek to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major stories shaping our world today, from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our program is available from the Center's website, globalresearch.ca. Our show is also broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We'll begin our show with news notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. Published data clearly indicate that the U.S. administration is about to create any pretext to launch a military strike on Syria. Most recent revelation that the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has used a photo taken in Iraq in 2003 to illustrate, quote, Syrian victims of gas attack, unquote, last Friday, to justify his malicious message to the U.S. congressman, gives even more evidence that the intelligence information the warmongers claim to be based on is groundless or simply fabricated. That's from the article, U.S. Military Intelligence Involved in Chemical Attack in Syria, by Oriental Review, posted September 4th. Hacker got access to U.S. intelligence correspondence and published U.S. Army Colonel Anthony J. McDonald's mail. McDonald is a General Staff Director, Operations and Plans Office of the Deputy Chief of Staff for Intelligence and the Army Staff. It's about chemical attack in Syria. In the message, August 22nd, Eugene First congratulates the Colonel on successful operation and refers him to Washington Post publication about chemical attack in Syria. From the Anthony's wife dialogue with her friend, it's clear the video with the children killed in the chemical attack near Damascus was staged by U.S. intelligence. That's from the article, Pentagon may be involved in chemical attack in Syria, U.S. intelligence colonel hacked emails, submitted by Saeed Al-Khalaki, freelance journalist, posted September 4th, originally appearing at hackersnewsbulletin.com. To launch an illegal war of aggression against a sovereign country on the basis of a report from the Israeli Mossad would seem to be the summum of irresponsibility and of naivete. For one, the Israeli Mossad is known for its expertise in false flag operations. Secondly, there are reports that the Israeli secret police has been very active in Syria and has carried out covert operations in that country. Keep in mind that the Mossad's motto, taken from the Bible, is by way of deception, thou shalt do war. And thirdly, the Mossad has done it before. That is from the article, Syria, Another Illegal War of Aggression Based on Manipulation and Fake Intelligence, by Professor Rodrigue Tremblay, posted September 4th. Countries laboring under the yoke of an extractive private banking system are being forced into structural adjustment and austerity by their unrepayable debt. But some countries have managed to escape, like Libya and Iraq, before they were embroiled in war. Syria provides free education at all levels and free medical care. It also provides subsidized housing for everyone, although some of this has been compromised by adoption of an IMF structural readjustment program in 2006 and the presence of about 2 million Iraqi and Palestinian refugees. Like Libya and Iraq before takedown, Syria and Iran have state-owned central banks that issue the national currency and are under government control. That is from the article, Wall Street's Secret Economic Endgame, Making the World Safe for Banksters, Syria in the Crosshairs, by Ellen Brown, posted September 4th, originally published on the Web of Debt blog. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. To help contextualize the latest developments in Syria, we have on the line Professor Michel Chossadovsky of the Center for Research on Globalization. So thank you for joining us, Michel Chossadovsky.
Delighted to be on the program.
Okay, now, first of all, let's talk about the August 21st gas attack in Damascus, which has been used as a basic casus belli for what's being discussed right now, a military intervention. Allegedly to protect the civilians in Syria from the Assad regime. If you remember August 21st and what was coming out in the media, what were your thoughts when you first heard about that incident and about the way it was being portrayed in the media?
Well, my first reaction was that this was a false flag, that this tragic event had been triggered by the U.S.-supported Al-Qaeda-affiliated rebels, which are being provided with vast amounts of weapons. Why? Because these rebels already had a track record of using chemical weapons against civilians. And if we go back in time, the United States and its allies have in fact admitted to the fact that they were training these rebels in the use of chemical weapons, so that you have not only reports, and we're talking about confirmed reports from Turkish police, from the United Nations Observer Mission back in the month of May, coupled with CNN and mainstream media reports to the fact that the rebels are in possession of chemical weapons and that U.S. and Western special forces are, in fact, training the rebels in the use of chemical weapons. So that the presumption that the government Bashar al-Assad was behind this contradicts, in fact, the track record of the chemical weapons issue from the very outset, almost a year ago.
Okay. So you're not impressed by, we've got sort of a Debka file special report from August 22nd saying that there was a discussion between U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and Moshe Yalon on the situation in Syria. And the content essentially said that Israel had recordings of commanders of the Syrian gas missile batteries ordering them to be fired earlier that day. I take it that doesn't impress you.
Well, there's been a lot of contradictory evidence which is being presented of fabricated evidence, none of which actually hangs together. The Syrian government has absolutely no interest in gassing and killing its own population, whatever one's views are regarding the government. I think that what happened is that, first of all, government forces were in the process of pacifying the country. The war against the rebels had virtually terminated, and these chemical weapons attacks were intended to provide a justification and a pretext for military intervention. And I should mention, that's important, is that all this has been planned well in advance. In fact, preparations, war preparations directed against Syria date back at least to 2007. But more specifically, if we look at a recent timeline, we see that the deployment of naval forces preceded the tragic events of August 21. The United States has dispatched 5 destroyers to the Syrian coastline. And in fact, 2 of those destroyers were sent about a week before the tragic events of August 21st. So that, in effect, we might beg the question, why is it that they decided to send these destroyers and various other ships, including landing, you know, the major amphibious landing ship, the San Antonio? Why did they send that to the Syrian coastline before the alleged chemical weapons attack, which they are now blaming on the government of Bashar al-Assad?
Is it possible, I mean, just to sort of rule out the possibility it could be some kind of a coincidence, this kind of, rearrangement of military forces, is it possible it was part of some kind of routine maneuver that's been happening periodically?
Well, the military maneuvers are routine, in the sense that when they send in a destroyer which is within the area of jurisdiction of the Sixth Fleet, it can be replaced by another vessel and so on and so forth. But in this particular case, they didn't replace the other vessels. They added additional vessels to the deployment, so that in effect what has happened is that this deployment of naval forces was coordinated with the event of August 21, but it was taken prior to August 21. Now, this may be a red herring, because in effect, naval deployments also occurred last year, as we recall, at the height of the Olympic Games, when the British and the French started deploying their big warships, and they were planning, in effect, off the Syrian coastline, war games, and the scenario was one of evacuating refugees and so on and so forth. It was not viewed as an attack plan, but it was a similar deployment, but on a lesser scale to what is happening now. So you've got deployment of destroyers, you have landing equipment, the amphibious ship San Antonio, which can land up to 6,000 sailors and marines, and so on. And then, of course, you've got the building up along the on the northern border in Turkey with the Patriot missiles. You've got forces in Jordan, and then, of course, you've got Israel, which is operating out of the Golan Heights. And we know that Israel has also been supporting the rebels out of the Golan Heights.
Hmm. Okay, now, you've acknowledged, we've spoken before, and even on this program, talking about the rebels as essentially being Al-Qaeda. And that it seems like that awareness has spread out, you know, even into mainstream media. There's even some soldiers who are saying, you know, putting out messages saying, I didn't agree to join the military to support Al-Qaeda, and that sort of thing. And it kind of begs the question that with the 9/11 anniversary coming up, I mean, how the U.S. government could possibly use 9/11, the war against terrorism, to sort of justify working with Al-Qaeda. If you catch my meaning. I mean, you want to talk about that?
Well, I think this is a very interesting development, because public opinion, first of all, now realize that the United States is supporting Al-Qaeda, and it's the new normal. It's not a covert operation anymore, okay? When John McCain or Secretary of State Kerry go to go to Turkey, or even when John McCain goes into Syria clandestinely, they meet up with leaders of these al-Qaeda-affiliated rebels. And we have photo ops of John McCain with some of these terrorists. Okay, so then the normal response of U.S. Servicemen and women is to say, we're not going to fight in favor of al-Qaeda. Okay, they see that their government is supporting al-Qaeda. And they are now involved in a campaign saying, no, we refuse to fight in support of al-Qaeda. And why do they say that? Because the United States government has waged a war on terrorism, which people somehow believe that we have to go after these guys, but we shouldn't be working with them. What, of course, is not mentioned and what is not perhaps fully understood is that it is not al-Qaeda which is being supported by the United States. It's the United States which is supporting al-Qaeda and using al-Qaeda as its foot soldiers, because al-Qaeda is a long-standing CIA, what they called intelligence asset going back to the Soviet-Afghan war, and they've used them routinely in various war situations, including, of course, Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Iraq, they have provided, they are, on the one hand, the foot soldiers of the Western military alliance in countries like Libya and Syria, and they are very often the pretext for military intervention, let's say in countries like Somalia Somalia, Yemen, and Mali. But in any event, what we have to understand is that al-Qaeda is a construct of U.S. intelligence. It's a complex issue. It's not to say that these are necessarily agents. They are being used by U.S. intelligence. But what is fully, what is now right in the open is the fact that the U.S. government is supporting terrorist organizations in blatant violation of its own anti-terrorist legislation, so that John Kerry is interfacing with people who are linked to organizations which are on the U.S. State Department list. It sounds somewhat contradictory, and I think that people understand that in the United States, and particularly people in the military, and that campaign has now been launched.
Now, I noticed there was an article you posted to your site recently talking about prison breaks in Libya, Iraq, and Pakistan, and how that's actually helping to bolster the ranks of al-Qaeda. I mean, could you maybe discuss that?
Well, this is one aspect which I think has to be addressed, is that that recently, in fact, in the month of July, there were major prison breaks in three countries, namely Iraq, Libya, and Pakistan, and virtually within days of it happened between the 23rd of July and the 29th of July.
So that was a very orchestrated, coordinated operation. It wasn't just
Interpol says yes, it was a coordinated operation. So that they say that these three events are related to one another. And first, you had two Iraqi prisons which were attacked in a very coordinated way, and they freed about 500 inmates. Then three days later in Libya, 1,200 al-Qaeda inmates were liberated, so to speak, or escaped, and then another 300 were released in a similar attack which took place in northern Pakistan. And so that all in all, it's about 2,000 Al-Qaeda inmates which were set loose, and one suspects that a large number of these have been recruited to join the ranks of the so-called opposition in Syria. And I think this is an interesting revelation, because what had occurred in Syria is that the opposition forces were being decimated by government forces, and that virtually the insurrection was over. And the Western military alliance didn't have the capabilities at short notice to start training a few thousand more of these rebels that they could send in. Most of them are trained in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. They're mercenaries. So that this procedure of liberating prisoners did perform a timely and useful role in the so-called recruitment of Al-Qaeda mercenaries, which who were dispatched to Syria. We don't have very good documentation to that in that regard, but when we're trying to sort of link up this event to the Syria insurrection, and also the fact that in the early days of August, particularly in Turkey, there were shipments of weapon systems into the hands of the rebels, and we're talking about thousands of tons. And this was actually confirmed in an article by Josef Budansky, which we posted on Global Research, is a very well-established analyst. And according to Josef Budansky, towards mid-August, there was a surge in military activity. Now, that surge could only take place if you have more troops. If you don't have the troops, well, you can't have the surge. And it's no use having weapon systems if you don't have people to use those weapon systems. So one assumes that this surge, which was characterized by major shipments of weapon systems, was also accompanied by a new influx of jihadists, of rebel forces, who would be equipped with this new influx of weapon systems, so that is one aspect. Now, I should mention again, there's information coming from very many different sources that the emails of a senior intelligence colonel were hacked, and these emails suggest that the United States was complicit in the killings of civilians, we have let's say evidence to the fact that it's not evidence, but it's an indication that U.S. intelligence could have been involved in the chemical weapons attack near Damascus on August 21st. And there's a lot of evidence and an analysis coming in which essentially refutes the main official story, which is unsubstantiated, that the government was behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think from my standpoint, the fact that the rebels were already caught using chemical weapons against civilians is the most important element. It's the history. And United Nations, the United Nations Observer Mission back in May specifically Carla Del Ponte, who is a Swiss lawyer, who was prosecutor at the Hague Tribunal, an establishment figure, confirmed specifically that the rebels were involved in the use of chemical weapons. Now, these rebels, and that's also confirmed by a lot of video material, they have been involved in the most, atrocious acts directed against civilians, beheadings. They've killed children. They've assassinated people indiscriminately.
And a lot of it has been documented on YouTube, too.
A lot has been documented and, in fact, acknowledged. Now, the question is, are these the people that the Obama is supporting? Yes, he is supporting these people, these killers, okay? And now he's trying to say, no, the rebels, we don't like the rebels, but in fact the government was behind it. But the government has been fighting against these death squads right from day one. That mm-hmm. was in March 2011. There was no protest movement in Daraa in March 2011. There was the incursion of death squads. That is something people must understand, that right from the beginning, there was an insurgency. It was an Al-Qaeda-affiliated insurgency. It was funded and supported by U.S. allies in the region, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey. It's documented from Israeli sources that Turkey and NATO were recruiting mujahideen across the Arab world to go to Syria and fight. It was not some independent entity. It was NATO who was recruiting the mujahideen, okay? Covertly, obviously, but those reports are there. And we have to address the fact that the United States and its allies have been at war with Syria. They've sent in their foot soldiers, these foot soldiers have been trained in the use of chemical weapons. And, of course, the United States has a track record of using chemical weapons against civilians in Iraq, in
white phosphorus.
Yes. Now, yeah. What on earth is this nonsense of them saying that they're going to initiate World War III because chemical weapons have been used allegedly by the government, when in fact the United States has the biggest stockpiles and the biggest war crimes in different countries? Agent Orange in Vietnam. There's still people who are affected by that. The environment is destroyed. People's lives are destroyed. People are killed. And then they say, no, we are the guardians of humanity, and we must intervene to save these people from their government, when in fact they are the people who actually went in, killed these innocent civilians using chemical weapons through their foot soldiers, the rebels, and then they blame it on the government. I think that is the truth which is emerging with all the information which is unfolding. Unfortunately, the U.S. Congress is towing the line, they are intent upon supporting the United States, the White House decision to wage war in Syria.
Professor Chofzovsky, really thank you for your analysis, both on your website and in this interview, and your unrelenting efforts to disentangle the propaganda around these and other military incursions that are have been planned and are being planned in the future. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Very good. Thank you very much. Delighted.
Okay, that's Professor Michelle Chosadovsky, who's the founder and head of the Center for Research on Globalization.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcast out of Winnipeg on campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM and on the Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM. We are also podcast on the website globalresearch.ca.
Paul Craig Roberts is the former Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury. He served under the Reagan administration. He's also the Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal, has held numerous university appointments. He is the Chairman of the Institute for Political Economy and author of, or co-author of 10 books, including his most recent, From 9/11 to the U.S. War Police State. He is a frequent contributor to Global Research. So, Paul Craig Roberts, thank you very much for joining us. I've spoken recently with Michelle Chosudovsky, and he's pretty much discredited a lot of the what we've been hearing about the humanitarian motivations of the Obama administration in wanting a military intervention in Syria. Now, I'm wondering, based on what you, everything that you've seen and reviewed, what your take is on what the real motivations are. What are the forces behind the scenes that seem to be pushing Obama, willingly or not, into what's likely to be a very, very catastrophic confrontation in Syria?
Well, it's the neoconservative ideology of American world hegemony. It's the interest of Israel. It's the interest of the American military security complex. The interest of the oil companies, and all of these come together and are mutually supported. Now, when this attack on the Middle East began 12 years ago, the notion in Washington was to overthrow the governments that were not American puppet states and to install American puppets. But they found that they couldn't do this. They were unable to successfully occupy Iraq and had to leave. After 12 years, they're unable to defeat a few lightly armed Taliban in Afghanistan. And then they were hit by the surprise of the Arab Spring in Tunisia and saw that other forces were working counter to their own plans and revised their plans. And the plan now is no longer to control these states, but to cause such internal chaos and strife between the competing Muslim groups, principally, of course, the Shia and the Sunni, that it simply destabilizes the entire region and spreads the strife into the Muslim populations of Russia and China, because these are the two major obstacles to American world hegemony. They can't, of course, invade Russia or China and expect to prevail. But the plan now is to simply try to spread the strife, to further radicalize Muslim populations such that it impacts the internal affairs in Russia and China and weakens them. And in this way, advances Washington's scheme for world hegemony.
So, in spite of the, it seems as if the plan has been a little bit clumsy in its execution. We've heard recently the British parliamentary vote, which went against the Prime Minister's allying itself with a military intervention before UN chemical weapons inspectors completed their work, and now Obama actually going to Congress rather than just authorizing it by executive fiat as he did in Libya. Do you see some sense in which the strategy is not working as may have been previously conceived?
Yes, I believe the Washington ran away with itself, with its hubris. NATO has information that Assad has the firm support of 70% of the Syrian population, has acceptance of another 20%, and that there's only 10% of the Syrian population that is willing to support the overthrow of the government. Now, this is in the possession of the NATO countries, and every leader of every NATO country, David Cameron in England, Hollande in France, Merkel in Germany, none of them have 70% support from their populations. So this information destroyed the myth that this was some kind of a unified Syrian effort to overthrow a dictator. And so NATO refused to go along. Another reason is that the European Union, of which Great Britain is a member, unlike the United States, has clear enforcement mechanisms when war crimes are committed. And it's unequivocal that an act of military aggression is a war crime. So whether or not Assad has used weapons of mass destruction, it's a war crime for the United States to attack him, because he has not attacked the United States. He's not threatened the United States. And so the unilateral action to attack Syria under the Nuremberg standard is a war crime. So this also has moved NATO off. And of course, the issue has been formed up as if an attack would be justified if Assad had used chemical weapons. Well, David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, was unable to show any evidence to Parliament that Assad had used chemical weapons. And he had to admit over and over that it was just his judgment that these weapons had been used. Well, this is not suffice to win the argument, even as it's drawn up. And in the United States, the intelligence report that the Obama regime released backing its claim clearly states that no confirmation exists of this evidence. It simply says this has a high probability of being true, but we can't confirm it. So even though the charge that Assad has used chemical weapons does not permit the United States to attack, even if the charge was true, when you don't even have evidence for the phony charge, and you also attack, it leaves you very exposed. And that is why there has been no support for Obama's planned attack. Now the question is, what will the Congress do? Obama saw that he was out on a limb, that he could not proceed on his own without being universally recognized as a war criminal. And so now the plan is to bribe and cajole and intimidate the Congress. And if they succeed in getting Congress support, then to go back to England and the NATO countries and the UN and try to get everyone to reconsider on the ground that they now have the cover of the U.S. Congress. I don't know whether it will work. I don't know what the Congress will do. The issue now is really no longer the chemical weapons. The issue now is America's prestige.
Interesting.
America's credibility. We have to save the face of President Obama. He's lost face. America's losing face. This argument appeals to the jingoistic spirit of Americans. It rankles Americans to think that they're losing face. And it could be very effective with Congress, even with the opponents of an attack on Syria, because, oh my gosh, America's losing credibility, blah, blah, blah. So I think this will be the issue.
Dr.
And Congress may decide that it has to endorse another war crime in order to save American credibility. That's the kind of...
So are you saying that...
Perverted way is a reason.
What do you think are the chances that Congress will not support the resolution?
I don't know.
No way to tell?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what...
We'll see in a week or two, mm-hmm. however long it takes them. They can rely on the media to make a big issue out of America has to save face.
Yeah.
And then opponents will be said, well, gosh, do you realize you're going to cause the United States to lose credibility? What will happen to our clout in the world? And blah, blah, blah. That's the type of argument that's already developed.
Yeah.
It's no longer a question of the chemical weapons. In fact, all the evidence that's coming out is that it was done. It was a false flag event staged to give Obama an excuse. In fact, there are news reports out of reporters on the ground who spoke with rebels who said, in fact, they're quoted by name, that they were given the chemical weapons by the Saudi Arabians, but were not told proper handling, and not knowing how to deal with what they were handling and transporting, they set them off accidentally and killed some of their own fighters.
Oh, interesting.
So this is now out in the news. It's I linked to one of the reports in one of my recent columns.
Dr. Roberts, I'm wondering about the whole idea of congressional support and how that would make a difference, I mean, realistically, in terms of how it would affect, the British Parliament, the French Parliament, and other centers, because it does seem very important for Obama to have to make this an international coalition.
Well, by itself, it wouldn't have any effect. But together with bagfuls of money, you have to wonder, what was the French president promised that he's so willing to demonstrate that France is a whore for Obama? We know that David Cameron will prostitute the British government to serve Washington. He's already tried that. So if Congress provides cover, then Washington will add money, and they may be able to buy the support. The outcome is to prove that Western democracy is a hoax, because the polls show the vast majority of Americans are opposed to striking Syria.
Yeah, all these leaders are clearly not taking their direction from the public, but rather that they're manipulating the public.
If you claim that you have the right to attack countries because you're going to bring them democracy, but you don't have any yourself, it sort of strips away the moral cloak that the imperialism of the West hides behind. And so it just simply discredits the West as an entity.
Yeah.
That, they say they're bringing democracy to people, but they don't have any home. Not a single population in any Western country supports the strike. So,
yeah.
How can it take place? It can take place because the countries aren't democracies. They are controlled by a tiny elite that makes decisions in its interest.
I think that if we concede for the time being that the motivations of the U.S. and these Western countries are completely cynical and opportunistic and geostrategic, as you indicated, and I'm wondering though if there's another argument, like beyond the kind of, you know, moral arguments that might somehow persuade people like Obama that maybe not going into Syria would be a way of cutting their losses. Does that make sense, or do you see this conflict as, however difficult it is to orchestrate, that even if they put aside all humanitarian concerns, that there would there be gains for them by going ahead with Syria, or
for Obama and the Obama regime, the only issue now is to save face, and so that's all they're concerned about. They'll do whatever they possibly can to save face. That means getting an okay. But it's not enough to have Congress's okay but still have no cover from the rest of the world. They need some kind of cover. In the past, they always had some NATO agreement or some UN resolution that they could twist and expand beyond its meaning. But if it's just the United States, even with Congress, it's still a unilateral action of one country, exactly as Hitler's invasion of Poland. And of course, the United States sentenced the surviving German officials and generals to death for an act of military aggression. And an act of military aggression is proclaimed in international law as a supreme war crime. So the regime, the Obama regime, will have to take into account that unilateral action, even with Congress's approval, still leaves the United States exposed in a way that its previous interventions were not. There's simply no cover beyond its own authority.
Well, Paul Craig Roberts, I think we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank you very much for that analysis and those insights, and hopefully maybe it'll convince someone from on high that the military action can be averted somehow. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, I'm pleased to speak with you.
Paul Craig Roberts is the former Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury under the Reagan administration and Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal. His most recent book, From 9/11 to the U.S. War Police State, is available, and he is himself is a frequent contributor to Global Research.
GlobalResearch.ca has been documenting a lot of the most important stories on Syria, and to tell us more about what they've been publishing, we have with us independent journalist and researcher and associate editor of GlobalResearch.ca, Julie Levesque. Hello, Julie. How are you doing?
Hi, Michael. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. First of all, I understand that the site has been getting a lot of hits in recent weeks, and I mean, do you attribute that to the Syria situation?
Yes, I think it has a lot to do with that. And actually, the level of propaganda in the mainstream media is incredible, and it's appalling. And I think a lot of people refer themselves to the to independent websites such as Global Research to get the real information.
Okay, so Julie, I know that GlobalResearch.ca has been publishing a lot of stuff that's not getting into the media, and you mentioned that the appalling treatment being given by the media, that's so appalling that it seems even the general public is picking up on it. Any features in particular about mainstream media coverage that you think is just not passing the sniff test for too many consumers out there?
Well, it's really one-sided. The mainstream media is focusing on, portraying the rebels as pro-democracy fighters, when in fact, you know, a lot of people know by now that they're linked to Al Qaeda, and there's a lot of death squads in there, and that they're backed by countries such as the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And I mean, it's completely absurd to think that Saudi Arabia, which is one of the most repressive regimes in the world, that they would be fighting for democracy somewhere else. I mean, it's completely absurd, and that is never—it's never mentioned in the mainstream media. The absurdity is never—I mean, they never talk about this, and it's always, you know, the most people who will go and be interviewed in the mainstream media are, most of them are willing to go to war against Syria, and they all have the same narrative, you know, that these people, these rebels, are fighting for democracy, and that they're being repressed by a brutal regime. So I think a lot of people are starting to see that this is not actually the truth, you know.
Mm-hmm. So there've been a lot of articles that have come out on your site with sort of different angles on the Syria situation. Do you want to maybe go through a few of the more, pertinent articles that is, you know, on the site at this moment?
Yeah, well, one of the latest articles that we've published is a timeline. It's called Timeline of Military Intelligence Operation, U.S. Have Planned Syrian Civilian Catastrophe Since 2007. And it's an article by Tony Cartolucci. And it's very interesting because he's citing documents showing the plan to create the actual situation in Syria. He says, I'll just read a little excerpt to you. It says, while the UN and nations across the West feign shock over the growing humanitarian catastrophe unfolding in and around Syria, the goal of a violent sectarian conflict and its predictable catastrophic results, along with calls to literally bleed Syria, have been the underlying strategy of special interest in the United States, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the regional partners since at least 2007. And, you know, he talks about the, like I said, you know, the classic propaganda scheme of foreign-backed armed groups and death squads portrayed as pro-democracy rebels. And what's amazing is that, you know, in the mainstream media, they will never, it seems like they don't have, history doesn't exist in the media, you know. We've seen that in Afghanistan, we've seen that in Nicaragua, in Haiti, in Libya, and it seems like, you know, and there is, it's documented that these, the death squads have been backed by, among others, by the CIA.
Yeah, the Contras in El Salvador, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
Yeah, the rebels in Haiti, and you know, lately in Libya, and it's always the same scheme. And it seems like, you know, the media just doesn't want to talk about this.
Are there any other articles that sort of stand out as must reads?
Yes. There's one thing that I forgot to mention in Tony Cartolucci's article. He mentions this U.S. Army General, Wesley Clark, who said a while ago that someone came to him with plans to attack. That was shortly after 9/11. He was working for the Bush administration at the time, and there were plans to attack and destroy the governments of seven nations. And among those nations, there was Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I mean, Iraq, we've been there, done that. Libya, it's done. And it seems like now it's Syria's turn. So, and this is never taken into account in the mainstream media.
Yeah, or for that matter, we don't hear much about the grand chessboard by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's total roadmap right. For the war on terrorism, right?
Yeah, it's all there. It's all there. There's another absurdity which is never mentioned in the mainstream media. It's the use of chemical weapons by the U.S. in Iraq. And the use of chemical weapons during the war that started in 2003, but also lately there was a few documents that were unclassified, CIA documents showing that the U.S. helped Saddam Hussein with chemical attacks against Iranians. So this is never mentioned in the mainstream media. And there's a really good article about from the Brussels Tribunal. I don't know if your readers don't know what the Brussels Tribunal is. It's an activist think tank and a peace organization. And they say that they denounce the logic of permanent war promoted by the American government and its allies. And their article is called Syria versus Iraq, the extensive use of chemical weapons by the United States and Iraq. And they say that it's very interesting the way they put it. They say President Obama's Secretary of State John Kerry has said that the U.S. condemns the use of chemical weapons. In order for this statement to be able to be taken seriously, President Obama must account in detail for the U.S. use of chemical weapons and demand legal responsibility for the crimes committed. And they say that instead, President Obama's Justice Department has demanded immunity for his predecessor, George Bush, and five of his close conspirators for war crimes. So they say no responsible person on the high level in the U.S. administration may be charged with war crimes. And this is completely absurd that they come afterwards and they say, oh, well, you know, the Syrian regime is using chemical weapons. It's unacceptable. Well, look in your own backyard, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I notice you, I guess there's an article from Paul Joseph Watson, Twitter flooded with active duty military and veterans opposing attack on Syria. So that sort of feeds in more into the whole idea of the public, like the wool coming off the eyes of the wider public. But it's particularly interesting that it's military personnel.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they say that they won't fight on the side of Al-Qaeda in Syria. I guess people are starting to wake up. Well, after a while, you know, it's like I said, it's always the same scheme, and people, you know, there's a limit to how many times you can lie to the public. You talked about the Brzezinski's Grand Chessboard. There is also, I think, an article of interest called "Yanon's Revenge: A Panorama of Chaos in the Arab World" by Marina Zamroya, and He writes, the current upheavals actually have a resounding resemblance to the objectives of the Yanon Plan of 1982, which calls for the fracturing of North Africa and the Middle East. And he says it's a continuation of the colonial project of the British in the region, and it has been transmitted to American foreign policy. And it explains the views of the neocons, you know, their views of the great Middle East. So that's very interesting. And one last article that I wish your readers to take a look at is James F. Tracy, who wrote A Century of Lies, The Rationale for Engaging in Foreign Wars, A Century-Old White House Tradition. You know, when we say it's always the same scheme, he lists a historical record of U.S. presidents' war lies. And he says, you know, if President Obama and his administration are not lying this time, it would be a rare exception, because history shows that we've always been lied to when it comes to war. There's actually a great file that we have on Syria. If you look at the website in the in-depth reports, we have a file called Syria, NATO's Next War. There you'll find many articles on the current situation in Syria.
Okay. Well, always great to talk with you, Julie. Thank you very much for sharing the latest from Global Research with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Okay. I've been speaking with Julie Levesque, who is an independent researcher and journalist and associate editor of globalresearch.ca.
You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can hear our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across the country. We are broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I am series host and producer Michael Welch. Join us again next week.